On today's episode, we're talking about how you can avoid burnout and build healthy work practices. I'm joined by Emily Douglas, who is an organizational psychologist, and she's going to share so many good insights that you need to hear about this whole dynamic of burnout. This episode is proudly brought to you by My Training, and we'd love to invite you to download today's worksheet and resource guide. It's linked in the show notes, so make sure you grab that resource sheet. It's going to be super helpful. Let's get into it. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Emily, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to be on the show with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Shelley. I'm really looking forward to our chat today.
So we are going deep this morning and we're talking about burnout. And this is an issue that is coming up more and more for people. And the rate of burnout we're seeing across the world, according to the World Health Organization, is increasing. So we wanted to dig into this episode with you today, Em, and really talk about what you're seeing in this space from your experience and background. And I guess my first question for you would be, why do you think burnout has become more of an issue in the last few years?
Yeah, great way to start and kick us off. So I think there's a few things that are perhaps compounding it. I think we would have seen this increase without a pandemic, where organisations are trying to do more with less, and often the cost of wages is one of those big costs of businesses. So if they can minimise staff numbers, then that puts more pressure on who's there. Then we add in the pandemic side of things, where the boundaries between work and home life really got blurred. That happened if you were trying to work from home, juggle caring responsibilities for kids, trying to homeschool them if you had that fun challenge in there. It also was happening for a lot of our workers that were going out to work as well, because obviously we had that group of people and there are some higher rates with some of those groups, because some of those childcare arrangements and those areas that would have taken some of that pressure off of going out and doing jobs and coming back home, that started to blur those boundaries as well. And maybe they were trying to juggle working away from home, coming up and trying to catch up on homeschooling someone, trying to get all those things done in a very confined environment that the pandemic created for us. So I think all those things combined has meant that we're just seeing this surge worldwide of burnout.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I'm getting like flashbacks to COVID and during the homeschooling. And I was like, you know, the thing that for me, like I realized in COVID how much I value educators and the role that they play in our lives, because I was like, oh my gosh, this has got to be up there with one of the hardest jobs you can do, teaching kids.
Oh, my hat went off to them. I mean, yeah, it really did. I think we don't want to go back to that. But yeah, that pressure that it put on people. And I guess also to mention that early on in the pandemic, particularly here in Australia, we had lots of people concerned about their jobs. Until we had different financial packages in place, that added pressure of losing your job. And this still didn't go away when financial incentives came in, but people were then working harder to prove their worth and making sure that they could keep that job security, because it was a real risk for people as well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting call out, working harder to prove your worth. And I think that is one of the kind of early signs, or maybe it's not even an early sign, maybe it's like a sign in general that you might be moving down that line towards burnout of like obsessively trying to prove yourself. What do you think are some of those causes of burnout?
So yes, definitely the workload aspect of it, but that's certainly not all that there is to it. So it can also be some organisational factors. So Are you getting the recognition for your work? Is someone else taking recognition for what you're doing? And that's sort of making you lose some of the passion for what you do. We particularly see when people are in work environments where they don't have a lot of control, or they don't think that they have a lot of control about maybe how work is done or the timeframes it's done in, and so that they don't get a lot of choice around things. So that control aspect is really important. Even the setup around the social aspects of work, those incidental opportunities to connect with people and build a sense of community. We as humans like to connect with other people, and having that sense that you belong to a group. And I guess as we're trying to strip back and make work more efficient, some of those things got lost, and workplaces maybe are starting to recognise again that perhaps there is some value in allowing a little bit of time that might seem inefficient, but in the long run is building capacity and encouraging people to perform more because they feel more connected to each other. So community, however you go about creating community, if that's not there in a workplace, that can lead to burnout. And probably one of the other ones, which it's hard to pinpoint exactly, but I guess where people feel that they no longer align with the organisation, they don't share the same values of working there. And I guess for some people that's not always present in work, but they can balance that out at home. But if, say, they've worked for an organisation for some time and it's started to change in the direction that it's taking, and there's a mismatch or a misalignment now with what you feel is the purpose of your work, that can also lead to burnout because you're fighting with loyalty to a company perhaps that you've worked with as they go through a transformation, and you've got to check in if that's still where you want to be.
I love that, what you're calling out about when your values no longer align with the business. And if you kind of push through that over an extended period, and I know on the like stages of burnout, I think it's like the 12 stages of burnout, one of them is maybe around the 4 or 5 where you start to disregard your own values, or you give up your values for something else. And a friend of mine who went through a really significant burnout experience, she was working in an organization, and she said to me after she left, she had some like quite a lot of time off. And I say time off in quotes because it's not time,
definitely
like,
not
recovery.
Time off,
yeah. It was a really tough situation that she was in. And we caught up, and she said this really interesting thing. And I was just actually thinking about it this morning, preparing for this podcast. She said, I started to measure days as being good if I didn't cry.
Oh.
And she's like, that was my metric of success. Yeah. Hey, today was a good day because I didn't cry on the way to work, or I didn't cry on my way home from work.
Yeah.
Or I didn't have to hide in the toilets and have like a meltdown. And that has stuck with me because this person, they are one of the most resilient, gritty, grounded people, so consistent, like. And I would describe, and we were laughing about it afterwards because we were like, I over a number of years didn't see her cry hardly ever. And then in this period of time where her values, and as we kind of talked about it, she realized that it was a values misalignment in the end.
Yeah.
And every day she was showing up to work and being confronted by feeling like this incongruency between who she is as a person and the things that she deeply values versus what the organization was representing, and going, there's this like cognitive dissonance and incongruency, and like just the feeling of, well, today I didn't cry and that was a tick box in my measure of success, and realizing how fundamentally flawed that mindset was, and going, you know what, if that's what I think a good day looks like, I need to get the heck out of here.
And I think the more you go into that, the harder it is to take that step back and have a look and go, this shouldn't be my measure of success. How did I get to this point? But we're often fighting with ourselves and our own expectations of who we are. If it's like, I'm always tough, I always get through these things, I always push on, and then you realize that perhaps that's not helpful anymore, and you've got to work out what's important, what do you value. And I did mention, yes, it's an organisation changing how they go, but I guess over time we also shift and reprioritise things as our life changes. I've found for a lot of people, because I do a lot of coaching as well, and in that space people found those couple of years where we were a little bit more at home, it was a chance for people to reevaluate what was more important to them. And we saw that, not so much in Australia, but overseas definitely, that idea of the great resignation, of people really taking stock of what work they're doing and whether that's something that they want to continue doing. Because, yeah, it was a big shift. It was a real shake-up of what do we want to do? What's the job that's going to make me feel happy? And no longer are we defining success in the same ways as each other.
Exactly. And I sometimes envision us when we're in those moments, as you say, over time, if you're ingrained in a culture or an environment where certain behaviors get normalized, sometimes it's like we need to hit the reset button. Like, you know, on your phone, the other day I had to reset my phone. And like, if you have an iPhone, you have to get that metal little tiny thing. And like, and it's really actually difficult it's a process to reset. And you have to go through all the settings changes and all that. And sometimes I feel like when you're in an environment that isn't helpful or serving you anymore, the process of resetting and hitting that reset button can be difficult in and of itself. Because the path of least resistance is just, well, I just got to suck it up and stay. And I think the funny thing with the path of least resistance is it often leads us down a path that we don't even want to be on anyway. So I'm like, it's a path of least resistance until we hit a brick wall.
Yes.
And then we're like, well, crap, now I'm here. Took this path and now how the heck do I get around this?
Yeah, as you were just talking about that whole reset, I'm like, oh gosh, IT does my head in. But it did make me think that, and I guess this is a bit of who I am. I like process, I like routine, hence I'm an organisational psychologist, not a clinical psychologist. But then I find that I'm often drawn to people that like that process and routine. And typically most people do, on some level, have like a routine. And perhaps it's that, but I know how things work. If I'm working here, I know what time I'm expected to be there. And you've probably started to shape your life and everything else that goes into work around that particular known. And going back to whether we have control or a sense of control in our work, it's also a sense of control in our life. And perhaps that's what pushes us to stay with something that's not good for us, because we're like, change is scary. So that's going to muck up not just where I work, but every routine, the commute, where do I fit in my other activities around it?
Yeah, so a trade-off decision is between, well, I don't have much control in my work, but I can control elements of it. Like, I know where I'm going. I know the routine. I know it's like the devil I know.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And if you've ever tried to go to a new job, and I work with so many different organisations, which means I'm constantly almost like having a new job, I guess, as a consultant, where you just even getting the systems up and running. Yeah, you know, that just takes a whole mental load of going, all right, do I have my email set? Do I have my passcode swipe in set up? Do I know when the pay comes in? You know, all those sorts of things. It's just an added mental load to work out and shift somewhere new, which would add to our stress at a time when we're probably already feeling it quite a bit if we're starting on that early signs of burnout.
Yeah. And to that point about the early signs of burnout, what do you think maybe some of the subtle signs that get overlooked are when it comes to burnout?
Yeah, the ones that get overlooked. So we know with burnout, the early signs, probably the most obvious is that tiredness, that fatigue that we can't quite pinpoint. And often we can make excuses about why we're tired and fatigued that don't relate to our work. But that's one aspect of it. But it also can be some of the other physical things that go on. So getting sick more often, having headaches, even just stomach pains. Often we feel it in our gut. So those physical discomfort that we might not recognise as burnout. And then we start to go into sort of more of those disconnection from work things that really point us in that direction that burnout is where we're heading.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to draw out in what you've just said, because I think it's so important that people hear this. Your body doesn't lie. Like, it tells us stuff way before mentally, I reckon, we pick up on it. So it's like the feeling of fatigue, your immune system, and I'll often hear people say when they reflect back on a burnout experience, they'll be like, I kept saying things like, I'm just run down. Or they say exactly to your point of, we make excuses or we try to excuse or downplay what's happening. We're like, oh, I'm just going through a rough patch. But the rough patch has been like 9 months.
Yeah. And it's normally your best friends though that go, it's not just a patch, hey.
Yeah. There was that like meme going around where it was like, I keep saying, after this week, things will get better every week. And you're like, but it never gets better. And you're like, I'm just having one of those days in a job that never has any other days.
Yes.
But I do feel like that idea of recognizing and listening to your body. And as you say, for me, like some of the symptoms that showed up after I had my burnout experience, I looked back on was nausea.
Yeah.
Feeling like I couldn't eat. And that nauseous feeling. And like you said, in your gut, like you kind of feel it, but also fatigue in your body, like feeling like you had, I remember thinking I had the flu.
Yes.
Like I had flu-like symptoms, but I didn't have the flu. And so it was like my limbs were heavy. And so my body was like telling me well before I actually went through and had to stop work for 3 months. My body was telling me this is not okay, but I just didn't listen.
Yeah, and we're not used to that, I guess, of listening to that signals that we're getting from our body, or going, okay, this is not just a physical ailment that's going on. There's something else here. And perhaps, I mean, I know you've gone through a rebrand, but perhaps this is a generational thing as well, of going, okay, we grew up in this time where it was about pushing through and going, yep, we'll just keep on getting sent to school when we're a little bit unwell, and we'll ignore some of those bodily signs that perhaps we're going unwell. And it's not then taught us to recognise when it's been going on for far longer than a normal kind of cold or even a flu that, okay, we've got to take that time to think, what else is this? And accepting that it could be something that is not a physical ailment.
Well, that's so true. And even just thinking about growing up in that environment where we were told to push through, I think about, for those who are similar age to me, they'll remember this, but if you're a bit younger, go with me. Codral, the cold and flu tablets, people, their ad for years was Soldier On.
Yes, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I've thought about that so much. Like, I remember thinking in COVID, that concept of like soldiering on, now we've kind of shifted away from that of when you're sick, just keep going, don't rest.
Yeah. And for all that is said of COVID and how difficult that was, there's a few little gems that come out of that time that we had to have a big reset. And I think that's one of them, of going, we actually need to take a break. And everyone had to do that. I guess what I am worried about now is that because the rules have changed, which means you can still manage to go to work and test positive for COVID, is we're flicking back to where we were without assuming that everyone can still work with COVID, rather than going, actually, they do need to take that proper rest for something like that, that we were so accepting of going, yeah, there's a 14-day block that you've got to isolate now and you can't do too much. We've almost gone back on that learning, which I think we do need to push back a little bit and go, no, if we actually take those, even if it's 1 or 2 days of rest, then we're going to be far better at our job on the third day than if we just kept on punching through for each day and doing some substandard work and being less focused on it. That the rest and doing that at the early signs, whether it be COVID, whether it be early signs that you're heading down that path of burnout, of that rest, recover, give yourself the time, and you're actually going to be far more focused and far more productive. And it's a good business decision, not just an individual decision there.
That's right. I want to know, we've talked a bit about those early warning signs that we should look out for, but what are some of the more extreme symptoms for the people like me that sometimes need to be hit over the head with the signs? Like, I'm like, I will ignore the signs for as long as possible. And I'm sure there's some listeners here who feel the same way that would like to know, Okay, I know the early warning signs. I may have missed them. So what are the more obvious?
And Shelley, I hope that you've gone through this and you've learnt and you don't do it to yourself again.
Well, do you know what? I will say I am one of my things, and I wouldn't wish that experience on anyone, but it's probably been one of the most painful lessons for me. And I am so much more diligent now about listening to my body, resting, and finding that thing that I do that helps me recover. So like, listeners who will be here from the early days will have remembered me being like, exercise, who would do it? But I've never been one to be like big into exercise, but now I do what I would call my almost daily walk.
Yeah.
And that's like a really important thing to me, that I'm like, I will not negotiate on that because it's like, so knowing the things that give me energy and that help me ward off against that burnout stuff has been a huge lesson. And so I will say that that's been a really important part of my own experience. But those extreme signs? Like, what do you see, Em?
And I want to come back to the whole walking thing, but I know we're going to get there and look at preventative stuff. But in terms of those more extreme signs of burnout, and I guess you're describing it before with the whole example of a good day was for your friend where they didn't cry that day. But things like that, obviously, when we feel disconnected from our work. So if you're in a role which you got into because you enjoyed, you were passionate about, and then you start to feel this disconnection, detachment from that work, or even getting a bit cynical around what you're doing, and that's starting to creep in more and more into maybe conversations with colleagues or your attitude towards picking up work, so not caring as much about what you're doing, and also starting to feel that you're not accomplishing anything. And that could even be when people are giving you that feedback of, no, you're getting everything done, it's on time. You're probably working yourself to the ground to do that because you feel like you're not good enough or you're not achieving what you should. So, feeling like you're not accomplishing what you should be. Definitely the emotional outburst is a bit of a sign as well, where that's just something that you can't really control or keep in check, that it's just coming up for you, where you do have to excuse yourself to go manage that. It can't be just managed in a room with people. Some of the, I guess, more detrimental signs that we see is people that are then becoming more reliant on, say, alcohol and using that as a way to cope at the end of each day, and that increasing more and more as part of it. There's some of the big ones that really kick in there that I start to see with people where, start to challenge them on, is this really the right work for you, or how do we find a way to take a break or take a step back from the work so you can not continue down that pathway?
Yeah, it's really interesting about those like more obvious signs. And I think for me, one of the things I've noticed with people through coaching and other things that they've indicated has been when they start to withdraw from things that would normally energize them. So like, let's say you're a massive extrovert and you get energy from being around people, and that's something that you love, the social outings, but then all of a sudden you're like, I can't go, I can't. And that would be really out of character for you. That would be a sign of, okay, we need to like check in what's going on here, because something that would normally give you energy,
yeah,
has become something that you're withdrawing or retreating from.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and going to be different things for different people, right? But it's about where do you get that enjoyment, whether it's a hobby of some sort. Some people do enjoy exercise, Shell, so, you know, maybe for some of them it's not doing that anymore.
That's it.
And not finding the time, yeah. Not prioritising that, and not finding the time for those things that they do enjoy, yeah.
Yes, those weirdos that love exercise. No, I feel like I've turned a corner, which is good. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Em, I want to dig into what preventative steps we can take, because we don't want people to go through this. Like, this is not an experience we want people to have. I'd love to pick your brain on what we can do to avoid burnout. If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
All right, so what are some of those preventative things people can do to build health and avoid having this experience?
Well, I think we started to tap into that before of making sure that you set yourself up with some good, I'm going to say routines because I just am a routine-based person, but some good practices that are preventative, that are going to give you, I guess, a bigger range to cope when there is added pressure in your life. I'll start with thinking about individuals because then I want to also talk a little bit about what organisations can do, because I think too often we throw this just on a what can I do personally and not back on the broader workforce. We were talking a bit about purpose and finding connection and meaning in what you do. And sometimes we can lose sight of that, even if we still have alignment with the work that we're doing. And so it might be a check-in and a chance to go, okay, do my values align? Or what is the reason that I'm doing this work? And reminding yourself of that. Often the day-to-day just might make us lose sight of that sometimes. So connecting with that purpose and making sure that the work that you're doing is authentic to who you are and what you want to be. Other things that you might want to set into your routine, I guess, is your overall baseline health. So are you getting good quality sleep? Is your diet on track? And are you doing some form of activity, whatever that might be for you? But often I find when I'm working with people is that sleep is the big thing that comes in as the immediate problem, and it's the one thing that we need to actually get fixed before we can go deeper with the work. Because if you can't take, you can't take on any more when you're not well rested. And so making sure that there is some sort of routine that tells your body, gives it the signals that it's time to sleep, and setting a bedtime, some boundaries for yourself. So you don't keep on going, all right, I'm feeling a bit rubbish, but I'll keep on watching that Netflix show that I really enjoy because maybe I'll feel slightly better if I keep on watching that, rather than just getting some sleep. We'd also have a look at what are those things that give you the positive endorphins. So it's not necessarily coming from work or not always coming from work. What is it that you enjoy doing? What are your hobbies? Making sure that they're a priority. Sometimes as life progresses and we take on extra responsibilities and we have relationships and other people in our lives, we sort of maybe put ourselves a little bit to the backseat. And we think that doing things that we enjoy could be a little seen as a bit selfish, when really if we don't do those things, then we don't have the energy to look after other people. So I do spend a lot of time of checking with people, what are you doing that's for you? And even if you can grab 5-10 minutes to do that, and it's not a gender-based thing, it's really about how do you grab that time. I mean, I just spent 2 days training a group, and it was actually a couple of the males in that room that said, yep, I get 10 minutes when the kids are asleep and I do something that I enjoy, or 10 minutes before they get up and do something that I enjoy, just to have, I guess, a bit of space for yourself. We might have to do it differently to how we used to. Certainly that was something with me with young children. But, yeah, finding some opportunities or carving out some time, and maybe it's a negotiation with other people in your household of going, right, Saturday afternoons, that's a sacred window for me, because then I get to go do something that I want to enjoy, or that's when my social sporting group plays, or that's when my reading group catches up. So putting those things in there and protecting them, not letting them slide off. I know I can keep on going with things, but I think the next big key thing I might leave it at is thinking socially. So who are you connecting with outside of work? Who are those social connections? Are they good social connections? Because sometimes we go, yeah, I got a great list. You're like, but are any of those people the ones that you would turn to when something goes wrong? So let's nurture those ones that are going to be, I can pick up the phone and I know they'll be there in a flash. Let's nurture those relationships. And maybe just think about how do we manage the ones that we can't necessarily avoid. There might be people in our life that aren't going to build us up, but we still need to maintain in our life. And so we just put some boundaries around how we engage there so that we've got a good social connection with people around us, because that's always positive.
It's definitely interesting to think of like how you build a support network and build systems that allow for you to be well in the long term. Mm. And sometimes the people in our social kind of sphere also drain our energy. And like, it's like if you've got like some toxic relationships, it's not just the work side that's going to be impacting. It's also those support networks that we need to kind of check in and go, okay, is this healthy or isn't it? Like, where do I get support from? Who are the people I can jump on the call and have like really honest, vulnerable, deep conversations with that is helpful and life-giving rather than energies sapping? I want to talk about what you think the organization can do, because I think you're right that we put a lot of emphasis on the individual, because at the end of the day, I can really only control me, but burnout is also a systemic problem of the way organizations operate.
Yeah.
What do you think organizations can do to shift this?
Yes, excellent. This is like one of those things that I just get really, really passionate about, of going, let's stop just pushing everything back of people need to be tougher or more resilient or just keep on pushing through. And look, I do see this change. We've got new, psychosocial risk has now become quite a push in organisations, and they're recognising the need to do something in that space. And so we need to have a look at all those processes. So how the workplace is structured, is leadership doing its job of looking after people? Leadership isn't about controlling and having all the power. It's about trying to get the best from the people that you work with. So it's almost, you know, this idea of servant leadership. So how do you look after people that you've been privileged enough to support? How can you encourage a sense of community within the organisation? So I mentioned before about one of the causes with burnout is where we're looking for efficiencies and we remove those social aspects from work. If we can look at how that could be supported, and now people don't want to be told how to socialise, but giving them back that option of that it's okay that to do it, and come up with your own ideas of how you like to do that. You know, some workplaces like to celebrate birthdays, or they like to have meetings where it's an outing to go get coffee or something like that. So doing those things and showing that that's still okay in the workplace and it's supported, rather than something you sneak off and do, I think is a great way of building a sense of connection, because it's those incidental conversations that you have with people. Sometimes you can do that or get that happening in a more deliberate fashion. So rather than starting a meeting with the normal sort of kick right into the content of allowing people a few moments to connect on something, you can throw some random topics out there. And that aspect has perhaps been lost a little bit along the way when we do online meetings and you dive straight in and you just kick into content and you're trying to make them really efficient. And we're not in the same room waiting for the meeting to start, having a little conversation with the person next to us of how was their weekend or what did they do last night. So we might have to, as an organisation, go, okay, well, that's not happening, so let's make it a little bit more deliberate. You get to the meeting and it starts on time, but we allow some time in there for some social chit-chat just to get that connection going at work. I think also at the organisation level, when we go back and think about how do we encourage people to stay connected to what is happening at work, you know, stay engaged, so it's having opportunities for people to grow and learn. How do we encourage that growth? Even if there isn't a prospect of promotion for someone, it doesn't mean that they can't grow as a professional in their space. So professional mastery, and that's always going to evolve as society evolves. So not staying stagnant in our jobs, but having an organisation where we can go learn a small new skill and look at how we might implement into the workplace. Could probably keep on finding more examples, but I think there's an endless array of things that the organisation needs to take on board and go, how do we prevent burnout in our staff? How do we encourage the human aspect of people to come to work along with just that productivity side that we're seeking? Because the net gain is we get more productivity from people that feel supported and engaged at work.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And one of the things that I've often talked about with leaders and teams is this idea of toxic productivity. When productivity becomes like diet culture, toxic productivity culture is when we get so obsessed with productivity that we lose all of those, as you say, incidental connection points and community building. So if we can look at, as an organization, and if you lead a team, this is for you, am I setting a culture of toxic productivity where we're obsessed with efficiency at the expense of people connecting? And I think you can have both. You can be a really high results-driven organisation and have a really positive culture where people connect and people are cared for deeply, not just for the work that they do, but for who they are.
Mm.
And that's the difference. So if you lead a team, I want you to look out for that. And you could even run a session with the people that you lead and say, hey, what areas are we missing connection and community, and how can we build that and get your team to speak into it? Are there any areas of the way we do things around here that might be considered toxic productivity culture, where we're efficiency at all costs instead of bringing that human element to the way we work? So for me, I feel like that's a really big thing. And I reckon the final thing from my end that I see in organizations that get this wrong would be they promote leaders who have habits that are like push through, drive, 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 drive at the expense of people. Now, I'm not saying we don't drive for things. We have ambitious goals. We go after them, but it can't come at the expense of people. And I think we need to value results and relationships equally.
Oh, all of that, big ticks. And that term toxic productivity, I think I'm going to borrow that from you. Oh, the research is there that says that it's not one or the other. This is not a choice. It's actually better to have more engaged people, better for productivity. We actually lose it if we're, you know, people are just working in their lane and they're not concerned about each other. We actually do more when we're connected to people. If we're part of a team, that collective skill set is more powerful than one individual working on a portion of a task. So, yeah, and leadership, setting the example around that. You just made me think there was an ad, I don't know if it's still running, but it was from a health insurance provider, and they gave the example of the boss walking out at lunchtime to go to their yoga lesson, and it was sort of the employee saying, well, that tells me that that's okay to go do that.
Mm.
And I love that collection of ads around that theme of, as a leader, are you setting up a culture that says you must keep on working all hours? Or are you setting the example and saying, all right, what time is it? I think it's time to clock off and go home. Or kicking your staff out of the office, even if you feel that you've got to stay back for something, of kicking them out and letting them know that it's okay for them to go home on time, because that sets that culture of, we value your personal life as much as what you bring to us when you come to the office.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to know any final thoughts, Em, from your perspective on what we can do in this space to build healthy work cultures and avoid burnout.
Yeah, okay. How to wrap all this up? I'll answer this in two parts. So I think as an individual, we need to start to pay attention, take notice to what our body is telling us when we notice that early signs of discomfort. And knowing that we don't always listen to your trusted colleagues or mates that are also reflecting that back to you as well, when they go, yeah, this passing cold has been going on for several months. Do you think we need to check in on that? So, yeah, as an individual, pay attention with what your body's telling you, but also set yourself up for that best opportunity to stay well over time, of having a real mix of things in your life, both personal and professional, that you feel connected to. And that can be the purpose in the work that you're doing, or your social activities, and looking after all your routines around sleep and activities and exercise.
Amazing. I love it. It's been such a good conversation, Em, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to us about this whole big issue of burnout. I know so many people are going to get stacks of gold from this. If you enjoyed the episode, I want you to do something for me, or two things. Share it with a friend who needs to hear this, and give us a 5-star rating and review on either Apple or Spotify. Means a lot, helps us get the pod out there. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today, Emily.
Thank you.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work, and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glen James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week, and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan, and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.